Good afternoon, staff and visitors and citizens. I'm going to open a call to order our business meeting for this afternoon, November 1st, 2021. So first, we will have our pledge of allegiance and a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Can we do the adoption, should we do the individual first?
Mr. Fairchild, yes.
Okay, all right. Mr. Fairchild will be joining us virtually this afternoon. And Mr. O'Brien is on his way, right?
Yeah, so for Mr. Fairchild, again, the board, he just has to list that he's remotely for personal reasons and the specificity of why and where he is calling from. Where he's calling from.
Okay.
And then the board would vote.
All right. So he does this online.
Yep, Mr. Fairchild, you could unmute.
Good evening.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm in a rental car and I've got the volume turned all the way up and I can barely hear anything. So if I miss something, you are doing or say it.
All right.
I just can barely hear you.
All right, you let us know if you're not hearing us, right? Just chime in and say, repeat that or whatever.
I'll try to. Everything is so low volume that I'm not sure, but anyway, I'll let you know if I have trouble.
Okay, well, be safe also, that's important.
So Mr. Fairchild, if you could state where you're calling in from and the reason you're calling in?
Calling from Amsterdam, New York, and the reason I'm calling in is because it's been snowing in northern New York all day, which messed up everything about me getting home.
Okay, so that you couldn't get your plane out, okay? Okay.
I think you asked if I couldn't catch my plane, and that's correct.
Yes, all right. So you're driving, so we're just saying be safe on the road.
Correct.
All right, we will now have the...
we now just need a vote.
That's right. We need to
vote. Motion and a second to accept.
Okay.
A motion to accept Mr. Fairchild in the meeting.
Okay, second. All right, we have a motion by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mrs. Eager, that we accept Supervisor Fairchild in the meeting this afternoon. You know, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, and chair votes aye. Thank you.
3-0.
Mm-hmm. 3-0.
And one absent.
Oh, yeah, Mr. O'Brien isn't 3-0. Here yet, and he's called and he's on his way. He's stuck too behind.
He is in traffic, and he's on his way.
All right, we'll have the adoption of the agenda.
Madam Chair, can I just add one thing? There was a citizen request regarding a request to add the road into the secondary state system, just under kind of a new business.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else?
Nope.
All right. County Administrator's report, please.
Yes.
Please have a motion.
I'll make a motion. We accept the agenda with the changes so made.
Okay. Second. All right. There's been a motion that we accept the agenda with the change made. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Mr. Fairchild, did you hear that we're accepting the agenda? He may not even see the agenda.
I'll vote yes. I didn't completely hear that, but yes, I'll vote yes to accept.
Okay. All right, so that's 4 and 1 is absent. All right, now we will have the county administrator's report.
Yep, Madam Chair and members of the board, just a few things to report on. A happy early birthday to Ms. Booker. November 8th it is.
Yeah, thank you.
Always saw one day after Election Day, right?
Mm-hmm. And always around Election Day.
That's right. So just a couple announcements. We have a new staff member, Bethany Hamner. She started in the library. Yep, she started in the library as a library member.
Really well.
Yeah.
She started on October 27th, so like I said, happy to have her along and have her in the library. And I know, like I said, she'll do great things with all the programs that Ms. Hoffman runs over there. So the 19th annual Trunk or Treat was held October 28th from 6:30 to 8:30. Activities included trunk or treat area, semi-scary haunted trail walk. There was a 30-minute wait time to start the trunk or treat activity. Attendance was 1,200 plus people. 1,000 plus children went through the trunk or treat area, but some in attendance only did the semi-scary trail. And there are 30 registered vehicles to hand out candy. Trunks included county departments, residences, businesses, and community groups. And thanks to Boy Scout Troop 138 and 1154, the High School SGA, and Fuma Interact Club for help with the semi-scary trail. And then just some upcoming meetings we have. So November 15th at 7 p.m. we have a regular meeting. December 6th at 5 p.m. we have a regular meeting. And then December 20th at 7 p.m. we have a regular meeting. All of those meetings will be held in the Performing Arts Center. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? I think we had a bunch of holiday treats. I think all the fire departments had something. The middle school had a big thing on the tracks. And they started like Friday, Saturday. I mean, it was a lot of things. Plenty of candy.
Yeah, if you can get your sugar fix over the weekend, it was
Yes, Mr.
And I will say this much also. And my attention is great, but I leave school kind of late some evenings. Riding through the county to see the new lights that have been done at the middle school, having 120 kids playing football, cheerleading, and things of that nature over there. So probably 200 kids over there involved. Pleasant Grove's got the soccer lights on, the softball lights on, and probably another 200 kids involved over there. And then we at the high school have ours, and we've got at least 200 involved over there. So it's really nice to see how many young people we've got involved enjoying themselves and making sure that they're doing productive things.
Right. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. And that's very important. Thank you. All right. Now I'm going to open the first public comment. So if you'd like to speak to the board, please come here to the mic and give your name and your address and talk to the board, and you have 5 minutes. Anyone like to speak, you're welcome. Yes, Dr. Kelly.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Seem to have pulled it off instead of adjusted it. I hope this works for you. My name is James Kelly. I live at 363 Manor Boulevard in Palmyra, Virginia. I'm speaking to you tonight as the chair of the school board. And I came to you in the October meeting to talk about carryover request. At that point, my board had approved or voted 4-0, one absent, for a carryover request for $500,000 to be applied to the central elementary bathroom to help offset the rather numerous and expensive list of CIP items. I was aware of at that time, but our board had not taken action to ask you all for one other item to be fit within the carryover request, and that is a population study. So as Ms. Booker knows, we've been having conversations as it relates to how many students we have in our school division and where ultimately they will go in our buildings. And one of the things, to be honest, is that we just don't know how many students to expect over the next couple of years. We have Colonial Circle, we have just population trend in general, we have some students that, you know, started kindergarten late, but yet we have, you know, functionally enough students for 13 classes of kindergarten. If tomorrow it were 14 classes, to be honest, I'm just not sure where we're gonna put them. We already have eighth graders in the high school, our middle school is unconventional. And so I think, to be honest, with fixed resources and fixed buildings with given footprints, we really need to know in advance how many students we're ultimately going to get. And so this idea came out of a conversation between Mr. Dahl and Dr. Gretz. And So the board voted in our last meeting 3-1, one absent. Sorry, that's, yes, 3-1, one absent. Sorry, I had to do some math there. It's been a long afternoon and a long season. To amend our carryover request to ask that you first fund the population study so we can hire a firm to tell us how many students to expect, and then whatever is left to put towards the CIP project at Central Elementary. We're hopeful the amount that we're returning to the county can in fact hold both. And so I think this is just a really good use of county funds in order to make sure that as we need to shift grades about or just do more with less and or figure out how to deal with the fact that we're kind of confined in the buildings as they exist, that we know how many students are coming and can make a plan for where to place them. So thank you all so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anyone else would like to speak to the board? Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Sam Richardson, 41 Lafayette, Palmyra. It's been over a decade since I've attended one of these meetings. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. I'm coming to you this evening as one of the few members of the Jewish community in Flavanna County. And as you know, October the 7th was one of the most tragic days since the end of the Holocaust. And I want you to know, because people haven't been asking, and a lot of people don't know, the Jewish community in Central Virginia, Flavanna County, were hurt, were scared, were angry, were frustrated, and quite frankly, we feel alone. The lack of response from our non-Jewish friends has been deafening. I have been on the phone with federal, state, local representatives who, other than the governor, and press releases, have not found it useful to actually make phone calls and visit Jewish members of our state and our community. And that's quite frustrating for us. We're the canary in the coal mine. But what happens to us will eventually happen to everybody else. This is a phenomenon that is not a Jewish phenomenon. And so what I'm asking of this board is if you will take leadership in the state of Virginia. And Powhatan County, last week, 2 weeks ago, they donated $10,000 worth of equipment to Israeli first responders. And I'm not asking for money. I'm asking for a solid statement from this board of standing with your Jewish community, with the people of Israel, and against terrorism. I brought with me a sample resolution that was actually passed by Mecklenburg County in North Carolina that I think addresses very well many of the issues. And I won't read the whole thing for time, just give you some highlights. Whereas on October 7, 2023, during the sacred Jewish holiday of Shemini Atzeret, Hamas, a designated terrorist organization by the United States and other countries, launched a coordinated attack on Israel from the Gaza Strip. And whereas recent Hamas terror attacks have caused immense suffering, loss of innocent lives, inflicted widespread damage on peaceful civilian population, I might as well add my friends and family as well, have been very severely impacted. Thousands of rockets toward Israel's major population centers, another several hundred just today. They've reached Israel's borders, infiltrated Israeli communities, kidnapping civilians, wounding more than 3,300, killing more than 1,300 Israelis. And whereas the residents of the Gaza Strip are not Israel's enemies, with many such residents opposing Hamas terrorist actions, and whereas we encourage and support efforts of Israeli leadership to reduce harm to uninvolved civilians who may be used as human shields to protect weaponry and leadership located in embedded in civilian structures such as schools, hospitals, and mosques. And whereas the residents of Flavanna County are deeply concerned about the escalating violence, loss of life, and impacts of this terror attack on innocent victims, and whereas Flavanna County stands firmly against any form of terrorism, violence, and extremism that undermines the principles of coexistence, peace, and human dignity. I propose that it be resolved by the Flavanna County Board of Supervisors that we stand in solidarity with the right of the State of Israel as a sovereign nation to defend itself and its residents against the despicable acts of Hamas and aligned terrorist groups. Stands in solidarity with the right of Israel and all people to live in peace and security. Stand in solidarity with the greater Central Virginia Jewish community, as well as with the Jewish residents of Flavanna County who have been impacted by this terrorist act, and support efforts to aid and support those affected, and strongly condemn the recent Hamas terror attack in Israel and express its deepest condolences to the victims and their families affected by this act of violence. I am available at your convenience to answer any questions, to provide any clarification, and to help with the draft, and I would ask that you would consider it for the November 15th meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to speak to the board? If not, I will close the first public comment. All right, now we are at, we don't have any public hearings, so we have action matters. A, 2024 Thomas Jefferson Planning District Legislative Program is on. Deputy Director of Legislative Services at TJPDC. Good evening.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the board. Appreciate time on your agenda this afternoon. I'll try to be as brief as possible, but I am here to present the draft 2024 Regional Legislative Program and hopefully get your approval. There's a memo and some materials in your packet that include the program, as well as a listing of some of the particular changes in the second part of the program. Top three priorities this year: public education funding, budgets and funding. Those two are the same as the current 2023 program. And then a new top three priority: land use and growth management. I'll spend just a minute talking briefly about those. Public education funding, state funding for K-12, you know, continues to be, you know, the top priority for the local governments in the region. I think we were boosted this year by the JLARC report that we talked about when I was here in September, which really told us what you knew, what I knew all along, that the state needs to enhance its support and its commitment for education funding in Virginia. I think when I was here before, we also had just gotten approval of the budget for fiscal year 24, and it did include some additional K-12 funding. I would expect with the governor's budget being released next month, as well as the General Assembly's consideration of it during the winter, that we'll see some continued discussions and priority on K-12 education. Priority number two, budgets and funding. This is the, we support enhanced state funding for state programs that are carried out locally. It's the no unfunded mandates position. It's the don't eliminate or restrict our local revenue generating authorities. That's kind of the summary of that position. It has not changed since 2023. And then with local land use and growth management, localities, I think, are concerned all the time. You know, when we hit the General Assembly session with what the legislature may consider in terms of legislation that may restrict or usurp or chip away at your authority to regulate land use and growth. And I think just with the uncertainties that we have this year about the General Assembly and who's going to be in, who's going to be in charge, that it was time to maybe put this back into the top three. It had been for a number of years one of the legislative positions, but I basically just took that program or that position statement, same wording, and put it into the priorities this year. So, you know, we can anticipate some things that are going to get thrown at us. There's a lot, you know, in the land use area that we don't know what to expect year to year. So just wanted to give that a little bit higher priority this year. Legislative priorities section, again, focuses on priority concerns, expresses positions on topics that are outside of the three priority areas. And on the the first one there is broadband, which was actually moved down from a priority statement. But there are a number of statements in there, topic areas. And again, there's a paper in your packet that lists some of the changes that were made. I'll highlight just a few. Under economic development, there's some new language urging state support for the Business Ready Sites program. Interestingly, that you had someone speak about the unexpended funds. There's a new position statement in there to support the current language with regard to local government authority for determining the use of unspent school funds. In general government, there's some additional, some new language to support state funding for agencies to carry out administrative functions and tasks. Heard from a couple of different localities in the region about some concerns, and actually in two different agencies, where just they didn't feel like that they had the capacity to be able to deal with applications and permits and that type of thing. And it was just kind of clogging up the works and slowing processes down. So this is a recognition of that concern that was expressed. And then finally, I'll just point out in the public safety section, there's been some language added to support Line of Duty Act benefits for private police officers. I believe this board went on record in supporting a resolution in support of that back in the summer, you know, in response to the very tragic situation in Nelson County. So those are the highlights that I wanted to share with you. Glad to take questions that you may have. And again, I'm asking for you all to approve the program this evening.
Any questions? It's a lot to digest. A lot of it is the same.
Yeah, we just kind of tinker around the edges.
Yeah, it is well put together. Any questions?
We'll be talking about this a lot over the next few weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And
I, you know, I certainly try to participate in their steering committees and looking at their proposals and try to incorporate.
We have some interesting steering committee meetings about education.
Mm-hmm. I bet. Yes. Okay, thank you. And we do have a motion here.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the 2024 Thomas Jefferson Pine District Legislative Program as presented.
Second.
All right, it's so moved by Mr. O'Brien and second by Mr. Ledwick. We adopt this legislative program as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
And Chair votes aye.
Oh, check, aye. Mr. Fairchild.
Check. Mr. Fairchild, did you hear the report from Mr. David Bond?
He's on.
Can you hear me?
Yes. We just received.
I heard some of it, so okay. Yes, I accept.
All right, thank you. All right, we will close.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Thank you. And I don't want to leave Mr. Richardson hanging. Where should we have, we've had this come across, we've had some discussion. Where should we put this? At under new business or?
Well, I mean, we don't have any.
We can put it on the 15th.
Yeah, we don't have a resolution in hand. Again, we came across the resolution mm-hmm. from Mecklenburg County
and Virginia Beach.
Okay, so we need to let Mr. Richardson know that we're going to put this on the 15th.
That's what staff needs to know. Like I said, what we found across the Commonwealth was, I think, only Virginia. I think Virginia.
That was the only locality I could find.
And I saw one. I don't know if you sent that to me or not, but I didn't. It was a two-page. I didn't particularly like that one.
15th would be good.
Okay. So we will be 15th?
Yeah.
Okay. And Mr. Fairchild? The resolution, Mr. Fairchild. He's probably, I think he's all right with it because he, yeah.
Well, we got three head nods.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. There's no formal vote, so.
All right. Good. Thank you. Now we will hear from the Deer Hunt for Handicapped Hunters at Pleasant Grove, and that's Alan.
Good evening. How's everybody? I guess I'm standing in for Mr. Payne today. He would normally do this every year for his
life. This is
Fred's things, Mr. Payne. Okay. So I'm standing in for him today. So I'm here to ask that you allow us to do a wheel and sportsman hunt in Pleasant Grove Park on December 22nd. It's a Friday before Christmas. Kids are out of school. So it should be safer at the high school where there's no kids in school, where normally we would do it probably like around, I think it's the 5th, and they would be back in school. So that's why that was one of the dates. That's why we chose that date. We'll probably have 7 to 10 hunters like we do normally and spaced out throughout the park. Are there any questions?
And the blinds, are you planning on the same location?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think there's a picture. Yeah. Close, depends on how many people we have.
How do you advertise this?
So it's through a private group,
okay.
And they sign up their individuals through their group for the hunt. So they have several hunts throughout the county. They do it throughout the county, not just at our park. And so they would register to hunt through their organization, and then that's who, and then we work with the head of their organization.
I can tell you that normally when we've done it, there's been one hunter from Kent Store. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where the other young lady comes from, but her assistant or her helper is one of our volleyball coaches who comes and works with them.
Mm-hmm. And we've been doing this for how many years now?
I think it's in 2015. I think it's in 2012, but I really think it's 2015.
About 10.
Huh?
10?
That's pretty long.
Yeah. About 10 years, I think, something like that.
That's great. Okay, thank you. All right, we have a motion.
I move that the Board of Supervisors authorize the sheriff to conduct a deer hunt at Pleasant Grove Park for the purpose of controlling deer numbers, such hunt to be managed by Wheeland Sportsman, a nonprofit organization providing outdoor recreation opportunities for handicapped hunters.
Second.
All right, motion was made by Mrs. Cedar and second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
And chair votes aye, and I'm sure that
thank you,
Mr. Fairchild. He's still muted, but I'm sure he'll be. Ms. Fairchild, can you? Can you leave yourself unmuted?
It'll just be 401.
Yes. Okay. All right. Next, we have Fluvanna County Partnership on Aging. That's pretty simple.
Yeah, this is a pretty simple one. Again, just to give some backdrop. So the Fluvanna Partnership for Aging was established in 1993 for the purpose of setting the needs of people 55 years and older in Fluvanna County, and to recommend specified support services to seek overall improvement in quality of life. So the FPA, and I know Mr. Booker can certainly chime in on this, they've had difficulty maintaining a full board for over many years, and actually has not had a quorum for the last year. So between the shortage of filled positions and low attendance, the FPA has not been able to, you know, have a quorum since early 2022. So with the inactivity and non-activity of the committee, and with some filled positions, again, vacant positions coming up, it was a recommendation of staff that the FPA be dissolved on December 31st. Now, I happen to have Mrs. Booker and Mr. Spitzer, who are kind of county representatives that have been on that board over the years, to provide any comments to the rest of the board as well.
I think that the triad has done a fabulous job, and I know Aaron's a part of that too, for our seniors. They had a triad on the 25th, and I tell you, the elderly people really look forward to that, and they have every nonprofit, everything sitting around that they can go and get information. They had a workshop on scams that they could go to. So I think that Partnership for the Aging was doing a good program, but now that we have JAGA and we also have Triad and we Meals on Wheels and a lot of services for our elders, we're quite fortunate.
And then the IAC too,
yes.
I think they do a good job of, you know, specifically organizations that kind of tend to look at the older population.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I know a lot of them kind of
yes.
bring together a lot of good information and resources as well.
Right. Okay, so we need a motion to, okay, we have a motion. Go ahead, if you want to do it.
I move the Board of Supervisors dissolve the Fluvanna Partnership for Aging Committee effective December 31st, 2023.
Second. All right, a motion by Mr. Sheridan and seconded by Mrs. Seeger. All in favor? And chair votes aye. Our next is Cityscape Telecommunications Contract. Mr. Dahl.
Yep, I'll take that. take this one. Okay, so an RFP was issued November 4th, 2022. We received two responses. So the RFP committee chose to move forward with Cityscape. So again, Cityscape provides telecommunication consulting services to the county. We actually had, we were with Cityscape prior, but just due to some, some change up and looking to see what other types of services out there, the county went away from Cityscape for a little bit and went with another firm. The owner of that firm passed away, and so the business stopped doing telecommunication consulting services. So we put an RFP out again, and again, our Cityscape was selected as the preferred firm. And so some of the services that they provide are just kind of on here on the list. Third-party expert application review, providers that want to go on cell towers and things like that, co-locations if they want to build new towers. They also provide site leasing consulting. Again, the county has its own towers, public safety towers. We've got water tanks, water towers, and so we've got cell providers on that as well. So what they would do is they would assist the county in helping to, provide leasing management services, administrative services, marketing the towers for any of those providers out there. There are also some optional services too, and I'll just kind of go through it really quick, but optional services would be a wireless assessment and infrastructure inventory, wireless master plan, zoning ordinance changes, and then our workshops or public meetings. So again, just to look at the tower fees, these are pass-through fees. So anyone that comes in, they want to build a tower, they want to make a change to a tower, these fees would be passed on directly to that provider. So there's no cost to the county for this, just besides some indirect staff time, but we also have some fees on our side too. And then the site leasing piece is probably the kind of a big component. So they would collect about 20% of the collected rents of the towers. So that would equate to about $29,000 a year. And again, helping to develop leasing strategies, organize the inquiry system for lease candidates, negotiate leases. What they would do, they would actually go out and physically look at our towers. They've got they are the subject matter experts that can go out and determine, did someone change a piece of equipment from 4G to 5G and it weighs more and it's different? Do they need to put a generator? Is the generator space that we're leasing, is the footprint getting larger? That is kind of their expertise to do this. And in kind of part of all that, there is a fee associated with it. So it's 20% of the collected rents that we get that would be paid to them. And again, just these next slides are just some of the optional services that, again, we're not necessarily moving forward with these. The other ones we definitely are, but these are, we can at a later point decide we want to go with these services if we choose. And so again, this just kind of provides a wireless assessment and in infrastructure inventory of the entire county, wireless master plan, and those are the costs associated with the different functions of that. If we wanted them to redo the zoning ordinance or do a comprehensive regulatory review, that would be the cost of that. And then, workshops, public meetings, or any other requested hourly services. So again, we've been without a provider for a while. We've been utilizing them on kind of a small purchase basis, but we're ready to move forward and move forward with Cityscape Consultants. Mm-hmm. So again, happy to answer any questions from the board.
Are there any questions? If not, we have a motion.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the term contract between Nevada County and Cityscape Consultants, Inc. for services associated with telecommunication facility application review, general consulting, lease management, and marketing services. Further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Okay. Can we have a second, please?
Second.
All right. Motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mrs. Eder. All in favor? Chair votes aye. Mr. Fairchild, did you hear anything, Mr. Fairchild? Okay, we assumed that
you said you lost audio.
Yeah.
Lost. Okay. All right, thank you. We have no appointments this afternoon, so we'll go to presentations. First one, we have Aqua Virginia Update by John J. Auerbach II, P.E. President. Good evening.
Good evening. How y'all doing? I appreciated when Eric contacted me with the offer to come and then the selected dates to visit. The only one I said I couldn't come to was the coffee. That one sounded a treat.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But maybe another time. So really appreciate this opportunity. It's been a while since I've been before you all and chatting. And if I forget about it, I'll be at Vaco in a couple weeks. And if there's any follow-on questions or things I offer to provide to you, if you just want to catch me and continue a conversation, that'd be a great opportunity. Also, so if we just move through this, the first cover sheet, the agenda, some areas I want to talk about that I know you're well acquainted with and have been hearing about. Our water work group we've started, the meetings we're having with the association at Lake Monticello, sanitary sewer overflows, which are referred to as SSOs within here, a jetter and a pumper purchase, smart manhole covers. This one's really going to be intriguing for you, I think. SCADA, commercial grid track inspections. That's a new one for us to get into, and then capital projects. So I just wanted to kick off with that. The next slide is kind of the Aqua Virginia at a glance, showing our footprint across Virginia, but more importantly is our regional facilities at a glance. And on the left-hand side of the page, I've listed out the water aspects with the capacities of our water plant, some key information there. We received another excellence award from the Department of Health, and the level has gone up on that due to some improved filtration to meet the next level up. The filtration quality is the same. What's changed is our level of monitoring and reporting to meet that next level on that voluntary program. And then on the wastewater side, our capacities. A little bit about our system. I don't think I've mentioned it before, but you know, 116 miles of gravity sewer lines and 39 miles of force mains, just around that area of the lake, is a lot of pipe in the ground. 3,000 manholes, 1,000 rider pumps, and 53 lift stations. That's, you know, quite a lot to deal with. And it's extensive there. But in this past year, we've also relined 2.5 miles, that included manhole work, to reduce inflow and infiltration into the system and preserve capacity. It also preserves energy. That's groundwater, other inflow coming in that we're not pumping, that we're not treating, and we're not discharging. So that actually saves on operation and maintenance expenses. So we've invested about $600,000 this year into that aspect. You can see our 1.38 is our regional water plant capacity. Our annual average year to date is 580,000 gallons a day. And you can see our regional wastewater plant, 775,000 gallons a day. And the permit that we'll be getting renewed will go up to 995,000 gallons a day. It's a tiered permit. It'll allow us to move to that point when we need to. And we develop some additional infrastructure at the wastewater plant to handle additional flows. And our annual average flow right now is just a little over 600,000 gallons a day coming into that plant. So if you look at those two numbers, that's not a lot more than we're producing for water, which is a good indication, and I've seen in some other figures, that our efforts to reduce inflow and infiltration has been working. We've been doing a lot of meetings. This one's on here on the right side of the page. A lot of meetings with the Lake Monticello Owners Association throughout the year. We did kick off in September a water work group as a subcommittee of a committee of the Owners Association. We've got a number of residents that are representing Lake Monticello on that. We had an initial kickoff meeting in September, had another one in October, got one coming up in November. They're going to be held monthly on the second Tuesday of each month. each one of those a separate agenda and information that we'll be providing. At the last meeting in November, we got into a little more discussion on committee work group format and structure and what everybody's really wanting to get out of this group. It was a really dynamic, positive, good discussion, but I never got to my topic I wanted to talk about that we had told them we would talk about, and that was rate making and what goes into a rate application and is sort of the sausage making of that whole thing with the State Corporation Commission. So we've got that presentation. We're going to do that at a later date and shed some light onto that. We're also participating on the county's technical review committee, and those have been very beneficial for myself. I've got a new state engineer who's been with me for about 14 months. He's participating in those also. And it's good for us to be a part of that process because we're not decision makers. The Board of Supervisors is, and the Planning Commission's advising you. We're just a subpart of that to try to help understand what our capacities are and our capabilities. And so it's good for us to hear about projects, interact with the community, Chief Ritchie, and understand his concerns and needs for fire flows, how that's impacting pressures, future projects, and the whole 360 on that. So we really appreciate that working arrangement. We'll move into a little more of the meat and potatoes of this. And sanitary sewer overflows. The picture on the right was from one that happened, I think it was in the July timeframe. And that mess you see on top is rags, flushable wipes, and materials that are not sewage that has been flushed down toilets. There's a device next to it, long cylinder, that's a bubbler. It lets air out. It measures the liquid level in the wet well, sends alarms when it's rising up too much. It controls things. That mess got around and it couldn't work. So you'll see on another slide, we're also doing a lot of SCADA. That's a control acquisition data analysis program. We're improving what we have there. So where we have these bubblers are coming out, other devices are going in that won't be as fouled. If that happens, we also want to get the material out of the system so we don't have these maintenance problems. But these blockages block the controls, they prevent the signals, they block the pipes, and they lead to overflows. And I am just as interested in everybody else as keeping that material in the pipes, in the manholes, and sending it down to the wastewater plant. We did have a number of them this summer. Jackson Cove, Polk Cove, there were two there. We've not had any additional overflows in the Polk Cove area, I believe since August. And it's around the time frame when pools were closing and snack bars shutting down. One of the things we're also seeing in the system is a lot of what we call fog, fats, oils, and grease. And that's a common problem. And it's not just from a homeowner standpoint. This is more of a commercial aspect, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that recently. Go to the next one. The picture in the center is really interesting. That's a 90-degree elbow piping that sewage flows through into one of our lift stations. That mess coming out of it is a commercial mop head. If you look at it closely, you'll see these long yarns. It's a commercial mop head that you'd be mopping the floor of this old building with. That cannot go down a 3-inch toilet. The only way for that to get the system is a deliberate action by somebody intending to do harm or just don't care what they do. They have to physically lift a manhole and throw that thing in. The picture on the top right is also a mop head sitting on a pump in a sewage lift station. These are not the same mop heads. They were two different locations. We'll find this culprit, and when we do, I will enact the fullest authority of law enforcement, local, state, and federal, for tampering with a wastewater collection system. We will find them. This cannot continue. The other problems are easy. Picture on the left, flushable wipes, those types of things. I think through an educational program, we can address that and clean that up and work with people just to educate, just to understand that these things flush. They do flush, but they don't dissolve. They come out the same way they went in. They get around pumps, they clog impellers, they cause pumps to burn up. And when that happens, overflows happen, sewage gets on the ground. A $10,000 pump is shot. That increases operation and maintenance costs. It goes into rates. Ultimately, it's my problem to fix. And I'm gonna do it. I've already got a couple things in place to do this. The pictures on the top left and bottom right corners are part of my solutions. If the other avenues I have open to me do not present a clear pathway. These are mechanical bar screens that can sit in that can be inserted at a collection system above ground or retrofitted into a pump station and above ground. That screen will remove this material coming into the lift stations or in the main trunk lines of the sewer, remove it out and dump it into a dumpster. That's sort of where this ultimately could go for me to fix the problem, as it's been pointed out to me numerous times by some folks. I don't want to do this. It's costly, it's unsightly, and it adds to the odors we're trying to reduce. So on the next page is one of the things we are doing. We have just let the contracts, after going through a lengthy internal process of analysis, and some RFPs to purchase a jetter, which is in the top left, and a vacuum pump truck pump tank, which is in the bottom right. These are trailer mounted units. The jetter has a diesel engine and heater, because the best way to break up a grease clog is under thousands of PSI pressure and hot water. This will allow us to do this. Now, we've been on as needed for preventive maintenance, renting from a local service in the Charlottesville area at $425 a day, a truck-mounted unit to come in. And when we're able to plan that as part of our routine maintenance, we can get it done. But when we have to call that in after hours, that price goes up. If we have to call it in after hours, we're based on the availability. So we've run some analysis, and we can spend the capital, about $200,000 that we're putting into this equipment, but it's going to save on that operation and maintenance cost with it. So it's a great investment for us. It's going to enhance our scheduled maintenance of the collection system, but it's also going to enhance our response actions to clogs as they occur. The 1,000 grinder pumps we have throughout Lake Monticello, when one of those goes out, we have to bring in 255-gallon drums and a manual pump, two staff members to pump the sewage out of the vault at the grinder pump into these other drums, replace, fix, or repair the pump, and then put that sewage back in. It's time-consuming, it's nasty work, it's time-consuming work. With this vacuum truck tank, we can then pull that on site. We can cut the manpower, we can do it quicker, we can get a resident back in service with their grinder pump faster, and it ultimately also save dollars. So on the next slide, through our analysis of the collection system, where we've been seeing problems, we've identified a number of zones. This is where we'll begin our initial routine jetting work. To clean lines and keep them clean, in addition to other actions. On the next page, smart covers. It's a brand name. We have purchased 10 of these, and they were all installed by the end of October. About $112,000 for those 10. They were a little over $11,000 a piece. They help us with the monitoring and inflow and infiltration. You can see the wires and the box underneath it. It's GPS equipment. It's ultrasonic level monitoring. We can measure and monitor rain flow within 0.3 mile around that manhole and compare that to the flow that's coming through to see if we're getting ionized, inflowing infiltration in the system. The data acquisition off of these is really, really incredibly interesting. Graphing, a lot of good stuff. If you lift it more than 3 inches, it'll send off an alarm to our tablets, to smartphones, and our apps. So it's intrusion, intruder detection. We've put these out where we think maybe somebody's popping manholes and dropping in mop heads. Did I mention 2x4s, PVC piping? I mean, that is ludicrous. We can protect the environment better this way. We can work on the SSO reduction. I started to buy 20 of these, but as we sat and did the analysis, we pared that back to 10 as an initial purchase. We can move these around. And when we move it from one location to another, all we have to do is contact the vendor who we have a 5-year contract with for the cloud service and all the data management. Give them the GPS locations of where we moved it, click it back in, now it's at a different location. So I can do that. I can do with 20 what I can do with 10. We've already found 4 locations we want to put them in permanently. The other 6 we're going to start moving around and see what else we can find. As they move around, if we find places that we need to leave it, we'll leave it, and then we'll buy others. Remember, I got 3,000 manholes. Not every one of these needs this, but we do have our ideas of where we do. One final comment on this one. These have already saved money. In the last 2 weeks, they have prevented 3 sanitary sewer overflows. One last week, 2 this week already. And this is just what, Wednesday? 2 in the last 3 days. All 3 of those were caused by fats, oils, and grease plugging the line. Enhanced SCADA at our lift stations. And we've got 53 lift stations. A lot of them already have some version of SCADA. That older bubbler unit that let an air bubble out in the water and then measured it and told us how high the column of water was, that's what we're replacing. We're going to higher technology that we can change the levels, we can monitor floats, we can determine when a float gets hung up by trash coming in it and it binding up and downstream flows. It's just incredible. There's a sample picture over here. Enhanced monitoring on our pumps so we can see power on, power off, that's easy. But we can look at amp draws and conditions. 5 of them have been completed. On how the first 10 initial that we're doing, we have 5 more scheduled for completion by the end of March 24. Others already have this. And then these are the kind of things you deploy, you do the analysis, you look for the improvements, you look for where you can do it different or better at the next lift station, and we'll continue that employment of this. These are live, just like those smart manhole covers. They're sending alarms to my staff on their smartphones and their tablets. Where we have already put these in elsewhere and now enhancing it here, my operating staff and my utility technicians look at this daily. They look at it at home at night on their sofas. I'm trying to get them to stop doing that on too much of a routine basis. And I'm joking about that because I really appreciate the dedication they have to their jobs. But what the employees have found is they might get 10 scheduled work orders for the day that tells them what to go do. But something will point out on their SCADA readout and they'll see where a problem's getting ready to happen. They can issue their own work order and redirect their work to go take care of that before it becomes a problem. Then they get back on track with the scheduled preventive maintenance, which is ideal. On the next one, we're kicking off a commercial grease trap inspection program. We've contracted with this company, ProShare Services, to manage this for us. It's a third-party vendor. I think it's 18 commercial food establishments, everything from the clubhouse at Ashlawn that has a catering kitchen now, the restaurant's not in full service, to all the other restaurants that are here. As we were working toward this, we knew this was a problem. We knew fats, oils, and grease was a problem. Theorized the commercial establishments may be a bigger contributor to these, you know, where you have restaurants and snack bars. The smart covers already nailed down one. I'm not going to mention any names tonight, but there's only one restaurant upstream from it. And that's a pretty easy giveaway. I reached out to the local health department and obtained some restaurant inspection permits. Things have changed over the years. They're focusing on that inspection, which they're only doing every 2 years from what I saw, the frequency, as to, you know, the food temperature, storage, those really nitty-gritty, very important public health aspects, which I support as a public health person from my career. What I noticed on those three inspections, they were not looking at the building plumbing and the building sewers. Those pages on all three of those reports were blank. So as I reached out to some of my old coworkers at the health department to inquire about this, I learned that they were not routinely inspecting grease traps. I was hoping to pull the inspection reports and find grease trap information, maintenance information, all that kind of stuff. It's not there. At least not out of the three out of 18. That's not an exhaustive search. But the conversations led to the point where the food inspector went on site. Unless they see an overflowing grease trap or a problem or an employee doing something wrong with where they're pouring something down a sink, they don't look any further. So, taking it on upon ourselves for this third party, I just finalized a letter to all the establishments today. It'll go out later this week or the first of next week, letting them know that ProShare, a third party vendor, will be coming in. Please cooperate with them. We're going to inspect your grease traps. We're going to talk to you about grease maintenance. Who's coming in and hauling and cleaning out your grease trap, whether it's outdoors, underground, or if it's an under the sink unit, and get an idea of what's happening. And then that's going to be followed up with recommendations and requirements, suggestions and requests to take care of this. And then we can take enforcement action against these. Within our rules and tariffs, we have the ability to take an action against someone that's not complying with the rules and tariffs. And I just worked with the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality on our permit reapplication to include a special condition in my permit, my VPDS permit, for a collection system maintenance manual, where I can also put these requirements in there too. That has legal authority then under the Code of Virginia and my VPDS permit to take action. So I was very appreciative that DEQ worked with me. I was able to work with them for the benefit of our customers here. I think this is going to be very interesting, you know, what we find out. Some highlighted capital projects. These are moving forward. A water storage tank study. We have hired a consultant to look at all the hydraulics in our regional area around the lake, both inside and out. We have some ideas of where we would like to put a tank. That'll be validated through modeling. We'll be getting a cost analysis, a style analysis. I've already asked them to look at yours when you get off the interstate. It's a very attractive tank. Try to do something. I think we're going to be doing something very similar sized with that. And I'll be looking forward to putting antennas on top of it once we get it. We have that elsewhere. And it's very beneficial to the communities. So that's something that we're supporting. So that study's moving forward. We do have an odor study with a different consultant that is looking at odors at lift stations and in the wastewater plant. That's going to be comprehensive. It's going to come back with, I hope, some really good comments and recommendations, something other than what we've heard before about adding deodorizers. They're effective, but they can be their own problem at the same time. So that one's underway. The out-of-bounds lift station, if I take your course, I've never been near that one. I'm always in bounds. That's my joke for the evening. That one's been replaced. That one's been upgraded. So we also are continuing a program of lift station replacement and modernization. We have a consultant doing a sewer capacity study for us on the conveyance system, but also the wastewater plant. I'm getting into the BPDS permit, a tiered permit to go to a higher level of flow. The consultants are going to tell me what I do at the wastewater plant to be able to accomplish that, what else we need to do in the collection system. I mentioned the wastewater plant expansion. Some future projects, wastewater treatment plant pre-treatment units. We're going to improve the headworks down there for finer screening and grit removal coming in. We're continuing to include the SCADA implementation that's in our five-year plan here. We're going to implement the study recommendations. Once we get them, we get the study recommendations, we're going to refine them, we're going to get them programmed out in our capital budget and get them implemented. And we're going to do additional hydraulic modeling and analysis of break data. We've been doing a lot of data collection on waterline breaks, not just here, but elsewhere. What kind of a break? So when they dig up that pipe and fix it, I want to know, was it a horizontal split? Was it kind of a circular split? Was it because it was old thin wall pipe and sat on rock that got blasted out with no bedding underneath it? We know that we're looking at that. We look at the frequency of breaks. But we also just installed some monitoring devices, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, on some hydrants. They just screw on. They've got a little cell phone gadget in there, sends us a signal. It goes to my corporate offices in Pennsylvania who are monitoring this for me. And we've identified some pressure fluctuations that are occurring. Not low pressures, not high pressures, just fluctuations that when a pump's turning on, it's hitting the pressure for just a second or a fraction of a second. But we're seeing, and I want to see more, is that tying to incidences of breaks that we're seeing clustered in certain areas? And if it is, what can we do about it? We've done this in other areas of our company in other states. I'm bringing that into Virginia. The regional facilities here at Lake Monticello is my first place I'm doing this. The idea is to find water flow hydraulics that can lead to the kind of breaks we're seeing. That's why the information we have is longitudinal or a circular break that really help us see if was it a pressure situation. If it is, then we can go in and we can change pipe diameters, we can add pipes, we can change pumps out with variable frequency drives, or add on soft starts so they ramp up and slow down. It's kind of a water hammer type of an approach. But they just got put in a couple weeks ago, and we're already reaping good data. That kind of, you put that then with your engineering gut and your analytics, and we're gonna come up with some more waterline projects here also. This is the last slide. I believe we are, and we're committed to being a good community partner. Really striving to provide the highest service possible. You can never get it perfect. I think if you think we're getting it perfect, we're kidding ourselves. There is no perfection. We can always do better. I admit that. I'm excited to collaborate with the Owners Association and this water work group. We used to have a water council. It died with COVID. It was hard to keep it going, so it's a resurgence. We're bringing it back. There's a lot of momentum there. Douglas Miles, I really appreciate working with him and his team at planning on this technical review committee. We're there to support the county and the county's economic development and growth and manage that and making sure it doesn't impact our current operations. The developers that are coming in, we're working with them. We're providing them guidance on what needs to happen within their systems to meet the needs of my systems that are serving them. those developers are paying for the infrastructure that they're putting in. Aqua's not paying for that. My customers are not paying for that infrastructure. That's the developer paying for that infrastructure based on our guidance and our requirements to go into that. Part of that is to also make sure that what they're developing does not adversely impact my current customers. And that's one reason, as you go around Colonial Circle, you'll see the North Carolina blue tank sitting there. I tried to get VMI colors on it, or Hokie, and I lost. But that tank is a separate pressure zone that's going to help manage fire flows there without impacting other pressures. We're also working with that developer that's going to contribute to the upgrade and replacement of a lift station that sewage is coming into, which we have under engineering study right now. And by the time that's needed, with their build-out timeframes, we'll have that lift station upgraded and replaced. It's about 40 years old. It works, but it's got 40-year-old pumps in it. Parts are getting harder to do. So it's a good time. The developer's partnering right with us and providing their share of what needs to happen to replace that and ensure they have their capacity without it impacting my current customers. That cost is not being borne by my current customers. So that's it. I talked a little longer. I think Eric told me 15 minutes. The agenda had 10. I joked I can barely introduce myself in 10 minutes. But are there any questions?
I have a simple question. Does Lake Monticello allow garbage disposals in their kitchens?
They are allowed.
Okay. I used to live in Brooklyn in New York City, and you're not allowed to do that in New York.
Yeah, if you think about it, I got 1,000 of them out there, all grinder pumps.
Yeah.
They're, so.
And how long do you think, I know you asked the state for a permit, how long does that take the state, before the state?
It's ramping up. It actually may be already in the process of being approved and on its way to us. I mean, I've got a permit to operate. It's just a normal reissuance cycle. That's all that is.
Does that take very long?
It's very streamlined. I can't answer with my. It's streamlined. I can't answer with the date. It may have already come.
Oh, okay.
You know, I may be a couple of days out of date on it, but it's a routine process that we have to go through the reapplication process.
I know we have other questions and concerns,
sure.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's been a bad year for you guys at the lake. Got a lot of people that are very upset and angry.
Yeah, and I've got some, like I said, we've got some solutions in place right now that are, I'm just thrilled that in 2 weeks we've been in 3 overflows, these smart manhole covers.
Yeah, and that's a lot of good forward momentum and progress. I mean, it does, you know, beg the question, and I know that you aren't doing this just this moment, but some of these issues have been going on for a long time, and the concerns have been there for a long time. And you know, the sense that I hear from my constituents is absolutely zero faith in Aqua, and you know, that's not a good place to be as a company that's so important and vital to our community.
No, absolutely not.
You know, we have a lot of citizens that are very concerned about your ability to serve any additional capacity in the area. You know, and obviously that impacts economic development and growth. So if you could address a little bit about capacity, I think if I recall, last 2022, you kind of made a presentation. It sounded like you were about 65, maybe 70% of your sewer capacity.
Yeah.
You know, that's not bringing online Colonial Circle. So I know a lot of folks feel like as soon as Colonial Circle comes online, you guys are going to fail catastrophically.
Yeah, that's just a false feeling, you know. And we're working on some messaging to try to help explain that. There's a lot of folks that are using book values to say what a house generates.
Mm-hmm.
That's great textbook for school, but in real life, it's a whole lot less. You know, we're looking at actually what's coming down the pipe, mm-hmm. and how many houses are contributing. We have capacity. We are not overwhelmed, as I've heard it say, with capacity. I have capacity. I have plans to advance capacity. That's why we've increased the permit tier, and I have a consulting engineer looking at what it's going to take to add into that wastewater plant to handle additional flows in the future if it's necessary. We're not against any walls on capacity from the Ravanna River with our permanent limits, nor the wastewater plant, and we're nowhere near the requirements of where we're required to submit expansion plans to DEQ for the wastewater plant. But I'm also not gonna wait until I hit that point.
So where are we as far as that goes? Are we at 50%, 60%? Again, I was just looking at what you had mentioned back in 2022.
Yeah, I think it was like a little over 600,000 gallons a day on a 775,000 gallon a day plant. So
that's on the wastewater?
That's on the wastewater.
And then the water, what did you say? Did you say 750,000 gallons per day?
It's like 1.4 million and we're at 500. So, yeah. You know, there we're like at less than 50%. Don't hold me to my math because I'm pulling the calculator out, but in a way that's 70-75% somewhere in that area in the wastewater. We've got plenty of capacity. What we don't have is community understanding, and that's my job to educate and share facts and get rid of the myths, get rid of the fiction, get rid of the feelings. And everybody's got an opinion, I appreciate their opinions, but we just got to share the facts with people. I have not done a good job sharing what I'm doing and what we're doing, so people don't think we're doing anything. Mm-hmm. You know, 2.5 miles of sewer reline is 600,000 gallons, $600,000 this past year. There wasn't a single Aqua truck involved in that. That was Prism Construction. So I'm having signs made up for my contractor trucks that go on the side says an authorized Aqua contractor. So at least when they're on the street, someone knows they're doing this work for them.
It's hard because obviously you have community that's upset. I mean, they're upset with Aqua all the time just because of the rates, but they're very upset.
You gotta hate somebody.
Well, you gotta hate somebody, but the overflows into the lake were really problematic.
They're very problematic, and like I say, you've seen the nasty pictures.
Yeah.
I didn't put that mop bed in there.
I'm sympathetic.
That's the one that caused the first one.
Yeah.
Was that mop bed? You let me catch that rascal.
Yeah.
Full enforcement of law behind it.
Yeah.
We'll take care of it. If you can find them, I'll put a bounty out. I mean, this is absurd. Okay? And somebody is affecting the residents' lake quality of life by doing that. Aqua has a responsibility not to let it happen.
Yeah.
That's why we're putting smart manhole covers in with intrusion alarms. You know, if we get down close to where it's going to be, I'm going to put cameras out there. You know, I got them back home on for hunting, right?
Right.
My son's so got it.
$90, you can have a picture come to your phone.
Yeah, doggone right. I'd rather see an 8-point buck on my phone. But if I can catch some rascal dropping that thing in there, I'll take it.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of thing we're doing. And I also know that, Polk Cove, two of them there. I haven't had any overflows there since some shutdowns at the pool and the pool grill. Want to get in there and look at those grease traps. That lift station was full of grease 2 weeks after it was cleaned out, along with about 100 liquor bottle caps.
I'm sorry, what kind of caps?
Liquor bottle caps. Now, if that was coming out of somebody's house, okay, I can't imagine. I got a feeling that's coming from some other location. Upstream of that lift station, okay? Same thing with the amount of grease that's coming in there and some other flows. We haven't had that since the pool shut down and those facilities shut down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna draw any conclusions there, but these are not routine happenings that are happening every day. So that's all part of my analysis that we're doing. And there's some other actions we're gonna take.
I understand that. I think what ends up happening though in these kinds of situations is essentially, we are now being asked to be water engineers and to decide your capacity because of that lack of faith.
And that's not your bailiwick.
But it's hard to argue that when folks see Colonial Circle coming online and they see five failures happening at the lake all at once.
Well, that
makes our job really difficult.
It does, and so you can keep that in mind when you're approving projects. We're not approving construction projects. I'm here to support them if you all deem them worthy to be built. We have the capacity to handle Colonial Circle, and there's some other ones out there, but they've got to meet my design standards. Mm-hmm. They've got to meet what we require. I mean, I'm not naive enough not to look at my flows. I spent 32 years in state government regulating water systems in Virginia. I understand the process. You know, I did inspections of water and wastewater facilities for a long time. I've been involved in the design and the construction of them. So I know what to look for. I'll be the first one to say when. But before I do that, I'll build additional capacity. Mm-hmm. And we're going to continue to handle it as long as Fluvanna County has a demand for the growth.
Yeah,
I mean, we're going to do it in a professional, responsible way.
And I know we've spoken before about how important the communication is with the community.
It is.
Yeah.
Some people you reach, you know, I think we've reached some people. They understand. Some people just don't want to be reached. Yeah. You know, they're going to have their opinions. And we'll continue to work with them, but what do you do?
You see it
from here on all the things you deal with. How do you... How do you reach people that maybe just have their own opinion and don't want to hear what you're saying?
With as much transparency as possible.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what you do.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's one reason I'm here tonight, speaking very openly and very honestly. I have spoken very openly and honestly at the association board meetings. You've been at a couple of them, the water work groups. Maybe I'm a little more open and honestly than I should, but that's just the way I am. I got nothing to hide. I'm transparent.
The most recent thing is all the discussion about the big blue tank there. Do you have anything to say? I know you said you wanted to put one of the universities on anything
else. I would love to see BMI red, white, and yellow on it.
What's going to happen to that eventually? I know it'll be there. But
it's going to be there. I mean, that tank is part of the service for the Colonial Circle community. It's additional water capacity storage for fire flows. One of the things that we require of them was that they had to help create their own pressure zone. Developer installed, developer paid for, so that it didn't impact the pressures in the rest of our community. So that tank is going to be part of the service in the Colonial Circle, particularly when a fire, if it ever would happen, God forbid.
Yeah, and it had to be right there.
Yes, ma'am.
And Madam Chair and Board, I mean, you know, I've had conversations with the developer about, you know, one, there's screening requirements that are part of the county zoning ordinance, so there's screening that's going to have to happen. And there have been discussions about doing screening sooner than later to kind of get to get some of those things buffered a little bit better, so it's not so out there.
Sure. And those are the things I need to be made aware of, because at some point I will accept ownership of that. But it'll come once all the requirements are met, or there's a punch list with whatever time frame is given to them to complete that, to accomplish that.
So the work group that you have, that's made up of Lake Monticello citizens?
Yes, ma'am.
Do they have any duty to be PR people or to go in and explain things or get more communication of what's happening?
The association's PR people are in the room when we're meeting. Mm-hmm. My communication specialist is with us. I've asked work group members to speak to people in their community with whatever they're involved in. And whether it's other outside extracurricular activities or their neighbors, bring information into us, what they're hearing, let us work through it, share information back verbally, that way, in addition to whatever else is shared out of those meetings.
Do any other communities that you serve other than Fluvanna have these same type of concerns?
I'd say that all of them have the same types of concerns. I don't have the same types of problems in other communities. I don't have the level of sanitary sewer overflows that are occurring in other communities, because I don't have people dropping mop heads in and stuff in that damages my equipment. I have eight other wastewater plants, and I have eight wastewater plants entirely and nine wastewater collection systems. This is the only wastewater collection system out of those where I have this problem.
This wastewater system that we have here, though, is by far the largest.
It is.
Okay, your numbers.
But as you normalize it, yes, I have about 5,000 customers here. I've got about 8,000 customers total. But as you normalize it, those are smaller with less people, but you still think you'd see some issues. I did have problems with sanitary sewer overflows at one location, but that was due to the inflow and infiltration that we were working on. We got hit with a hurricane a few years ago during, I think it was like 4 years ago during the previous administration's time. A statewide emergency went out. We had some sanitary sewer overflows at that location. I was hit with a state consent order because of it. Localities weren't. But we continued to invest. That was a flow problem, I&I coming in. It was not the other materials causing the overflows. So even though they're smaller, sir, you normalize it. I should be seeing something, and we're just not.
I know there's going to be time at the meetings when you present to the SEC, but I will remark that it seems incredibly, you know, tone deaf to be asking for a 30% increase in light of everything that's happened. You know, from that standpoint, I mean, I think the level of anger and fury that's going to be directed at Aqua is going to be very high, and it also is damaging the community in the sense that, you know, we already have very high rates, which affects the values of people's homes. And so I really think that, you know, the timing is just absolutely awful.
So those are interesting comments. We had sort of the same comments in the 2020 rate case that were filed in testimony about home pricing. We asked for the details on that during the interrogatory process. We never received that factual information that home pricing was being impacted. So there again, it's, is it, isn't it? You also have to, if you look at the filings, and they're only about that tall when you stack them up. The increases this year were related to capital investments in our historic test year, which basically through 2023, but also this year, this filing, we added in the capital that we're spending in our rate year, which is basically 2024. So it is additional capital spend. It's about $30 million worth of capital spend across Virginia, where one of our normal rate cases prior to that might have been the $6 to $8 million capital spend. That just is a reflection of more work being done, more improvements being accomplished. And that does contribute to that rate request. I think it's going to be very interesting as this plays out and we work through the State Corporation Commission. We have a hearing scheduled, I think it's April 24th or 26th, and you know, we'll be there. That's the evidentiary hearing, and the work is already going underway with the State Corporation Commission staff to prosecute their case. It's a legal process, you know. So we're meeting with them weekly, answering questions. They're filing discovery and interrogatories with us and requests. We're answering every one of those that comes in, and they're joining us in Pennsylvania at our corporate headquarters next week for about 2.5 days on site to meet with our subject matter experts about this rate case to learn the facts of the filing. And then they'll be coming to my office in Rockville to be scheduled and spend about a day pulling invoices and interviewing us there also.
I have one request, and maybe you've already had this request before, but it would be interesting to know where the lake stands in relationship to the other people that you're served in regards to pricing, because there is a sense that the lake is really subsidizing your growth in other areas, and that just adds to the distrust.
Yeah. Well, that was in my rate making 101 course that we didn't get to at the last water work group. We'll see if we can get that rescheduled, and I'll invite you to attend that one whenever we get that one done. But I have various rate categories in our tariff, and in that they're broken down by systems, and the systems in that category pay the same rate as any other system across Virginia, and then that all goes in toward the capital. So it all ties in with the capital is being spent across the Commonwealth and not just in any one area. And so it is a consolidated rate base, which is what the State Corporation Commission wants to see.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I got one real quick short one.
and I don't have a dog in this hunt. I live over in Kent's door. But one thing stood out to me, you said the devices you installed saved 3 overflows.
Yes, sir.
Last week, right?
Last 2 weeks.
How many overflows besides them did you have?
We had, subject to check, I think in 2023 was 4. I may be missing one. I'm sorry?
Total?
Yes. There was one last week. Maybe it's 5 or 6. We saved 3. Now, where they would have been SSOs or a backup into somebody's business. We've also had that happen in that same facility. It could have gone either way, just depending on what happened. The key thing is it prevented a problem. That's definitely the takeaway.
I was just sitting there going with 600 miles of pipe or 116 miles of pipe, whatever it was, I can't remember. But three saves in 2 weeks, I was like, well, holy cow, all the other manhole covers, how many of them actually overflowed?
How many actually overflowed?
Yeah.
Would those happen? We had like 5 or 6 where they actually popped down through them.
Okay. Thank you.
And it's a slow leak. They don't actually pop the manhole. The manhole picks, it's coming out of there, so it does stream out.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. I really appreciate y'all's time tonight.
Thank you.
Sorry I took so much of it, but I really appreciate your attention and the really good questions.
Thank you.
And look forward to seeing y'all in a few weeks. Corner me. I know some of y'all are not bashful.
That'd be nice.
I know you are.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate it. You're nice other times too, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Our next presentation is from Mr. Douglas Miles, Community Development Director, 2040 Comprehensive Plan Update. Thank you.
Good evening, Chair Booker and members of the board. So we'll be going over kind of mostly maps, not a whole lot of text, but information that will help you understand. This is the current 2015 adopted comprehensive plan, future land use map. And just keep in mind that the light green area, because we've been showing you for the last year or two in the open houses and everything, the entire area being rural preservation, but currently the rural residential area that's also some people classify in their comp plan rural suburban, that's proposed to go away and make more of the county rural preservation. Spent well over a year and a half on the rural preservation efforts, which we'll go through in these slides, but and then obviously that greatly enhances or further enhances the area for community planning areas to be utilized rather than the rural residential area. Since 2003 or 2005, when rural clustering came about, the rural residential area was designed to have some of those rural clustering neighborhoods surround and provide housing and activity around the community planning areas, and in the last 20 plus years or so, that's not happening. A lot of that's the rural clustering that's been done in the county has gone into the Ravana District, actual CPA. There have been some very good rural clusters that have been done in the county, but by and large, in our demographic analysis, you'll see that. So what we've done and what we've worked on with the advisory groups and the planning commission and the changing planning commissioners and new planning commissioners coming on, which has been great because we've been able to work with them as well. But in 2020, you know, the census data came out, and a year or so later, we received a lot of that worked on through our development activity reports, the DARs, and put together basically about a 10-year analysis of the census data from 2010 and 2020. And so in 2022, Jason Overstreet, the senior planner, put together a lot of that information. That's gonna make up the component of our demographic information in the new comp plan. then we also worked with this historical preservation group and with Trisha Johnson and some of their volunteers at the Levana Historical Society to include additional, what I call inclusive historical facts that haven't been in there before. And so we'll have some more of that. But the bulk of the work has been Chapter 2, the rural crossroad areas and rural preservation. All the counties in the TJPDC in one form or fashion have what's called rural crossroads. Quite honestly, Albemarle County has probably some of the best information along with Goochland County joining us as well about rural crossroad areas. And I think that in seeing the demonstration and the a lot of in the last year or so, the last conditional rezonings, we've been doing more information relative to the screening and buffer areas in our county gateways. And so, So what we were talking about at rural crossroads, we initially did work in 2022 on the 15 corridor in the Troy area, the Wildwood area, and the Dixie area. And what we found is the rural transportation network that we've done requests on through the Smart Scale process, a lot of that is really not the base, the underlying transportation network is not where we were looking for some of the rural crossroads areas, but in the analysis, you know, a lot of the country stores, the Troy Market, some of the businesses like Campbell's Tires, they're locating in those kind of commercial rural crossroad areas. So what we're proposing in the comp plan is to continue to build upon that. Also as the two northern part areas of 15 corridor over the next 10 or 20 years, 20 years in this comp plan, you'll see, especially in the Troy Market area, you'll see that there'll be the potential for additional infrastructure. And then the Wildwood area and Dixie are going to be a little further down. I think Dixie someday will become more of a dog bone roundabout or some smaller style roundabout as opposed to those all those intersection crossways forming. But so those were looked at, but in a little bit later in the presentation, we'll talk about one that was selected in the rural preservation group really grasped onto it, and the business owners in the area. So, but the key things relative to comprehensive plan are the goals that are established, and just for slide purposes, these are kind of the main points of the goals. You know, one, and I won't go through all of them, but you know, obviously, goal number one is preserve and protect the rural character of the county. Whether that's through complete preservation or through the rural crossroad aspects where you're utilizing historic buildings or in some cases buildings that can be built to look as matching those historic buildings and having a modern infrastructure in a building but yet still having that building look like an old country store that matches some of the other buildings. So there's different ways to go about that. And obviously goal two, it talks about the availability of the land. You know, as famous bumper sticker, you know, so once farmland is developed, it goes away forever. It doesn't come back 20 years later. If you pave over a parking lot over a farm, that's not coming back. So the key part is, like we showed earlier, is to get rid of the rural residential areas to allow for growth, and as Mr. Blount talked about earlier, land use and growth management is real important in Virginia and Central Virginia specifically. As Mr. Allback talked about, protecting both surface and groundwater resources for availability for whether it's systems that are created or systems that are operating like FUSD or whatever. So, and goal four is going over the natural resources and environment of the county. Air quality is pretty good here in this area, but soils and other rural ecosystems that are found within the county and also in the region, not only in Flavanna County, but the aquifers and watersheds are real important throughout Central Virginia. So we have to work regionally with groups and our neighbors, the counties around us. Key one for us in working on this was economic growth can be compatible, keeping environmental quality, agritourism, and all the other things that you know, economic development and the county overall is promoting. You know, economic growth can happen in areas with the rural crossroads or with revitalized areas that that can come back and rebirth themselves. So, but the other things that this 20-year plan would look at in rural preservation is ensuring that existing and future residents are protected from noise and light pollution, from what's called suburban development, and if we can concentrate them in the CPAs and definitely in the Zion Crossroads urban development area, and practice night skies, and noise abatement, noise buffering, trees and screening cause natural areas for things not to be concerns of night noise and light pollution. So the main one that we worked on throughout the second part of the rural rural preservation advisory group was this area, and this is just a general depiction of the study area that the Route 53 and Garden Lane and then Nahor Manor Road to your west. And yeah, it is capturing a little bit of that area of the villages of Nahor, but really what we're trying to do is just point out that that's kind of their area of their community center and greater interrelationship with the overall Crossroad area and the dentist office that's located at right in the corner. So working with Susie Morris, Deborah Curry, who owns a building and commercial property in the area, the karate studio and the old country store and things like that, and then also landowners like Mrs. Morris, Mrs. White, other areas have expressed to have limited involvement with some of this frontage along 53 and to have opportunities for rural crossroad businesses and areas that would reflect that. Just remember, we've had, in the time that I've been here, we've had that commercial tract of the area of Nahor Village, north of Mrs. Curry's property, to be looked at for suburban development, and that's not something we're interested in. Uses like a tractor supply or someone like that, if the property was large enough and zoned correctly, they would have possibly selected there, and that's not where we want them. So in the design and the architectural community thoughts for historic preservation and creating that rural sense of place and maintaining it for another 50 or 100 years. And that's possible to do so. But the key thing is doing the adaptive reuse of some of those buildings and providing office and commercial light retail land uses to serve the area. Just drive down the street, walk. A lot of the folks, I think Mr. Fairchild has told me before that he jogs and travels throughout Garden Lane in this area, so we're trying to get some of that availability and keep it available for folks who want to enjoy that area of the county. So in last year, Ms. Mack brought a lot of this forward. But the key part for us is, you know, each component or part of the plan has already had involvement from the Planning Commission board or the board overall. And, you know, some of the key points there are really important as they relate to the comprehensive plan and planning and economic development that work together. So, you know, a lot of the good things I noticed, you know, in that strategic plan, it talked about placemaking. That's a very important element for a comprehensive plan to enhance the spaces that we have or that we can create for both our residents and tourism guests who come in and deposit their money and leave throughout the day or weekend, so that we have those opportunities. And that had some really good goals and objectives throughout that strategic plan. I think that helps form some of the framework of the overall comp plan goals and objectives. So some of this information is a little older, but in 2018, the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission and previous county staff and planning commissioners did work on some of the information, but for transportation, some of the key parts of it, transportation accessibility, like access to jaunt or access to other transportation opportunities. But also we talk daily or weekly or monthly with VDOT on transportation safety and the physical road or what they call geometry characteristics of intersections and where things can be improved. So really throughout a good portion, the first portion of 2021, from the winter into the start of the summer, the Planning Commission appointed the Transportation Advisory Group, and we studied the 53 corridor and did a lot of analysis with some of the previous folks, Alan Saunders and Bethel Kafalo, and worked on some of the, also in the latter part of 2021, we worked on the functional classifications for 53, 15, and where things, our main arteries went in and out of Albemarle County and the Charlottesville region proper. So the transportation primary road functional classifications changed from major arterials to minor, major collector, excuse me, to minor arterials. And that gives us better scoring and opportunity in the smart scale process so that we can actually compete equally with Albemarle County in some of the opportunities for transportation. And I think fortunately a lot of that was brought to us from the VDOT Culpeper District and Mr. Kevin McDermott at Albemarle Transportation and Planning networking with them through the TJPDC on the Rural Transportation Advisory Group. The completed safety analysis of the Route 53 corridor, which we'll talk about a little bit also here soon, also created things more in the bicycle and pedestrian type activities that are real high in VDOT's minds right now. And so that, right after the 2018 rural transportation plan, they finished up, I think right before I got here, the 2019 Jefferson Area Bicycle and Pedestrian Plan, where extensive work had been completed in the Charlottesville region, recognizing the value, as Mr. Witten is one of the main ones I think about with this type of plan, bicycling and both off-road and on-road, and pedestrian infrastructure that we're, you know, gradually working on and creating at Pleasant Grove Park in Palmyra. So the major US 76 bicycle trail system, in a month or so ago, we brought some of the changes in the Palmyra area to you all. With this major bike trail system passing through here, we have an area where people traverse going up the hill on 53, competing with automobile and truck traffic quite often. And if you look at the analysis area of where that corridor is, we own most of the right-of-way along that area until you get up past the high school. So, and then there's opportunities as you get more in the kind of rural suburban area, right there at Fruit Hill, and continue up. Well, VDOT owns a lot of the right-of-way in the roundabout area, so we have a really strong opportunity in working through a future thoroughfare plan to create a safe, separated travel lane. And this is one of the main things that came out in the open house events that we talked to residents about, not just our advisory group members, but could you create some areas where we have a separated travel lane? At one point, 2 years ago, the General Assembly had people that passed a bill where you could have side-by-side travel bikes going up. Not a lot of people did that because it's quite dangerous, but I do know in my 4 times a day traveling that corridor, I did see some saddle bike riders riding 2 abreast, and they were legally allowed to do that for a year. Unfortunately, as Mr. Blatt would probably tell you because I talked to him about it, they changed that after a year because even the riders and people doing it were felt it was unsafe. So, you know, that bill and that type of legislation was passed in the areas for like the Williamsburg, Yorktown area where you have a really slow traveling area where you can ride 2 abreast. So I'm trying not to get down into details, but I'm trying to also let you know we've done a lot in the last couple of years on the comp plan. And these are the highlights that came out. And I think the safe travel, separated traveling will really be beneficial. And one last part of that is, as Mr. Saunders, Alan Saunders, worked with us, most of our residents don't want 53 to become 4 lanes. And by the way, we really don't have the right of way to do it, but we do have enough right of way and opportunities as Flavanna County and VDOT. And then working with, you know, a few landowners in between to do that travel. And then it would make us so much nicer rural preservation, agritourism opportunity, people to travel through and eventually in that new area that's currently undeveloped, we would have opportunities for things to eventually be have bike stops and areas for people to pit stop and park and other businesses, Fruit Hills and other Fruit Hill type businesses that come along. So this is a side-by-side comparison. I think you know, obviously you can jump out, you can see the rural residential goes away, but we've been using for the last year or two the one on the right-hand side that really tries to emphasize our community planning areas in the Zion Crossroads urban development area that's right there at our water storage tank.
So a quick question.
Yes, sir.
So what we're saying is that there's not going to be any cluster subdevelopments anywhere other than in the CPA zones?
We're actually looking at possibly having opportunities of not having rural clustering in the future.
So all that land just becomes A1, stays A1, no changes. Landowners don't have a right to change any of it.
Yeah, we've been having growing interest or growing discussions with a lot of landowners and subdividers to increase the minor subdivision process, which currently you can get 5 lots plus a residual, and being able to maybe increase that, enhance it more to 8 to 10 lots, and be able to do a little bit of an off-site improvement where they might actually make more cul-de-sac or court rather than an entire rural cluster. So,
but any change to the county's current rural cluster subdivision ordinance, that would have to be approved and changed
correct.
By the board. If they want to go in that direction.
But in these minor subdivisions, there is no set aside in those minor subdivisions for, you know, as there is in the cluster subdivision right now, for 75% to be set aside, or is there?
Not in the minor. It becomes a residual parcel, which someone else could also build on. But by and large, we're finding that the rural cluster set aside, the 75% property, is one house, mm-hmm. or it's 35 or 40 drain fields and laterals that are located in there, and then 20 or 30 years from now, that those systems start failing, well, guess what? Water and sewer lines might have to be run to serve those areas that are never intended to have water and sewer lines. So there's pros and cons. We've studied it every year. I think Mrs. Eager and the Planning Commission have always asked us to every spring to revisit it, show us the development activity reports. But yeah, as Mr. Dahl said earlier, those type of changes would come after the comp plan was adopted and the subdivision and zoning ordinance decisions on that. So the key part, in 2020, we dropped below 10% growth rate, down to 6.3. So we're not legally required by VDOT and the state of Virginia to do rural clustering.
Gotcha.
So we have, the county overall has that option, but we're trying not to set off any alarms with saying that we might take away rural cluster. We're just trying to say that there may be a better way to look at it. And we've had some recent activity of 8 to 10 lot rural clusters requests that really would probably work better as minor subdivisions. So.
I understand that, but in a minor subdivision now, there is a residual piece of property that needs to be put aside?
Yeah, it's usually the back acreage that's undeveloped and create the frontage. The downfall of a minor subdivision is what a lot of planners will call road stripping or stripping the parcels. There's actually ways to, like I said earlier, to create more of a slight cul-de-sac or court. And then, because we're already doing it with 10-acre lots on private roads, and our goal really in the comprehensive plan and working with VDOT is to get away from private roads, because someday VDOT in its future analysis will be turning over secondary roads to a lot of localities in the future. I mean, you're talking generations from now, but again, 20, 30 years in comp plans, we always want to make sure that if some future Flavanna County Transportation Department is maintaining their own roads, well, they don't have right now, like, you know, if you had, like, say, 100 miles of private roads, you don't want to have 300 or 500 by then, because then you're maintaining them. So we're trying to look at an analysis of finding out how can we get people to bring in smaller amount of, the whole idea of a rural cluster from VDOT's perspective is they want 1 mile of road to maintain, as opposed to 3 miles if you do a standard 2-acre subdivisions like Taylor Ridge and Fox Hollow and things like that. So, but for us, originally, in the process of rural clustering is to compactly put those lots together and save the remaining 75%. So that's and the...
How many minor subdivisions do we have? It's one up on Mount Hill Road, one right here. 15.
Yeah, we do.
How many?
We do probably about 5 to 7 minor subdivisions a year. And a lot of them right now are on like Courthouse Road, mm-hmm. Carey's Creek Road. We did a whole lot. Yeah. That's the other thing. A gravel road that's state maintained. We prefer not to have those. That was enough, not to delve too much into the details, but That area, Carey's Creek Road off of 15, was originally going to be a rural cluster, and that landowner developer chose to do multiple minor subdivisions and created about the same amount of lots, but did not preserve a lot of land. So he just made large lots. Yeah. So there's opportunities for us to look at it. Still getting enough opportunity for landowners to build homes, but maybe just be a little smarter in the way that we design them and bring some of those roads into the system in the process. So, try not to get too deep into all that, because as Eric said, the next board may choose not to. We may want to have that. So, I mean, yes, ma'am. So just touching on this a little bit, the overall the water and wastewater master plan or utility infrastructure plan kind of overall that you all adopted last fall, the process would be, you know, putting into the capital improvement plan a lot of utility infrastructure projects. So especially sewer projects and treatment facilities, as Mr. Albeck talked about in his world, that they can be put into the CIP plan and we can build them for growth and development. And right now, you know, even opportunities like we're doing now, on next week we'll be bringing the JRWA project will be coming through the Planning Commission through the special use permit stage for the water intake and raw water line. So we're constantly using the analysis. And in the current 2015 plan, the James River Water Authority requirements are in there because they were changed in 2012, 2013 in the comprehensive plan to be in line with that. So I've already put some of that into the staff report for next week. So we're constantly using even the current 2015 comp plan to support that type of infrastructure development. So. And then this is kind of landing towards the end of the overall discussion. This is where we'd like to be when we hear the next couple months to end out the year and be able to have this type of land use map to work with. And I think the public and a lot of the folks on the Planning Commission and the open house analysis really supported that. So it's kind of in closing, the overall framework for bringing all these consultant plans into the overall framework of the 2040 comp plan. In the planning process, a lot of times you'll create that comp plan overall as a framework, but we're really looking at, we started a little bit of this summer, Louisa County Planning and Flavanna Planning, to do the 2024 proposed Crossroads Gateway plan design guidelines. And we used some of it in the analysis and work that we did with the rezoning for Renault Consulting and the Wawa. So kind of tested it out in their conditional rezoning. But basically it boils down to, it comes to earth tones, neutral type analysis, or type design, excuse me, and stonework and or other kind of natural features are what we're striving for in that area, and trying to get away, at least also on the Flavanna side, not so much of a suburban type development, box stores and things like that. Nothing wrong with those, but they can be designed and put together to match some of the type of design guidelines that provide a welcome gateway into the county. So, so this is these, as we said, gateways. The two ends of the county on 250. We have strong interest in developing the 250 and 15 interchange. You know, in that southwest quadrant. So, in the opposite respect, in the comprehensive plan process, this area of 250 in Albemarle County in Flavanna is way off. But at the same time, in the process, you always want to protect and have the parcels so that there we don't get minor subdivisions road stripping that area across the frontage. And then 20 or 30 years from now, if a commercial development wants to come in, then they're actually demoing houses or doing things like that. So in the zoning and subdivision aspects, we would encourage that those areas not be developed for residential, just because they could do that. So that might take an overlay at some point, or basically a lot of planners call a reverse overlay to save for the future, and then design overlay that would encourage development right away on the other end. So it's really hard for developers to deal with residential when you're trying to do office, commercial, and development in an interchange. Or and if you notice in the top right of that slide, what's up there, 64? 20 or 30 years from now, there could be other roadways coming off up there, interchanges that Albemarle and Flavanna could benefit from. This is kind of where we're landing here tonight. with setting up some meetings here in the month of November and going into December to finalize some of the work with the two folks from the Board of Supervisors and Mr. Bibb and Ms. Morgan from the Planning Commission and staff. And then we have other community partners and representatives that would help advise and finish the comp plan. So this is a really quick, in the last year or two, of some of the key dates and times or periods that we worked on things. We had this series of open houses. Then we worked in the Rural Preservation and Historic Preservation. They originally were one group, and I won't delve into it too much, but they did not work well together because we had some things going on with the how the advisory groups thought the goals should go. So we separated them, and then it became a whole lot better as we worked into it. And I think a lot of the things that happened in those two groups were really beneficial, and we have a lot of really good draft text and things for the future. We were able to locate Kathleen Kilpatrick's help, the 1993 historical land survey for historic designations. Actually, in our archive research, I found another one downstairs in our county administration archives. So we have one as well. And then this time last year, the Rural Preservation and Historic Preservation groups presented their findings and research to the Planning Commission, and we have done that. And then on the last slides here, start of the new year, at the end of January, we did a full day planning design session with all the staff members in TJPDC, Flavanna, and Louisa, and some folks that served on the Zion Crossroad Advisory Group, Mr. Hartwitz and Josh Bowers and others that helped us formulate some of those things. And then we've been working on, as of late, spring and summer, we've been working on the regional hazard mitigation, and we've been doing a lot of research and work on the FEMA floodplain maps that further enhance our natural environment chapter, and those are updates and federal mandates that we're required to do and glad to do because fortunately we're a county that does not have a lot of floodplain and flooding issues, but where we do have them, they can be rather severe along the Rivanna and the James, but fortunately those areas are few in the county. So, and towards the end of the summer and into the fall, like I showed you earlier, we've been working on that Nahor Rural Crossroads area as the test example, and then hopefully we can turn that into a rural small area plan in 2024 and get that established. And then this is just what Ms. Harris and I kind of went through. Generally, what we're hoping to do, as we finish out the fall and the year, Mr. Whitten and I would also need to do some final analysis through state code and everything, like what has to be part of the comprehensive plan and how we advertise it, set it up for the public, and then bring it through the Planning Commission Board for public hearings for adoption, and then allowing the staff to go on with the small area plans in 24 and 25 in those next 2 years.
For the last month, it says January, February, is that?
I'm sorry, that's 24, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry, ma'am, I left that. Yes, yeah. So if you have any questions or comments, thoughts that I didn't
bring. Any questions? We can see a lot of work done.
Have we examined other communities that have taken sort of this approach here?
Yes. Like I said earlier, the Goochland County and Albemarle County had probably some of the best examples of the rural crossroads areas, and they most recently, Goochland County and going to escape me of some of the, I think it's Courthouse area,
probably Centerville.
Centerville, I think. I knew it was a C, yes, sir.
Haydenville has a little bit.
Yeah, Haydenville and all those areas. Now, they recently, unfortunately, scrapped what they were doing in some of the areas of the Tupco Village because people felt it was, and I say unfortunately, what I mean is I know that they had a design consultant that put a lot of work into it. So, but it was going to become too much hotel, restaurant, suburbia kind of things, and they wanted to, in their analysis of, that's not Tupco Village, it's nowhere near a rural crossroads, but they wanted kind of like, I think, what we're striving to do in the Zion Crossroads Urban Development Area. Mm-hmm. They don't want to see the cookie cutter suburban stuff just marching down Broad Street into Goochland.
I think Tuckahoe, is that right there where Capital One comes out?
Yes, sir. And Capital One,
right there off the 288.
That West Creek Industrial Park, and so you know, I mean, those are, and then Albemarle County, and we worked with them a lot with transportation, but we also benchmarked on some of their rural crossroads. But we differ a little bit in the fact that yeah, we do think a Tiger Fuel Mart might work in an intersection and not be denied, and not to cut on Albemarle. But I mean, there are sometimes there's service related commercial node uses that could be constructed in rural areas.
Mr. O'Brien, when you said approach, are you talking about the way that we've done it? Like,
no, I mean, in other words, you know, just going with all rural preservation, okay, you know, rural clustering, you know, no rural residential.
And yes, and because I was going to say one thing, when you talk about approach, I mean, you know, some of that localities get consultants to do the whole comp plan, right? And you know, there's pros and cons of that. The pros are the comp plan gets done quicker because just with staff and resources, you don't have the staff time to commit to doing the comp plan. The con is there's a cost to doing that. So, and I don't know what the costs are of those, but they're probably the
100,000,
easily 100,000.
Yeah. And if they don't jump them out, they don't get paid. That's why you give them back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, kind of in closing, with Mr. Dahl's, you know, thoughts or whatever too on that is, we had so many different consultants doing things already when I arrived and interviewed Mr. Dahl and Mr. Nichols and others. We kind of thought the approach would be that you do this reverse comp plan opportunity that the other consultants come up, you know, parts of the whole, but yeah, in doing a Hill Design or Berkeley Group or someone like that, it does only usually take about 18 months to 2 years to finish everything, but then they have, you know, multiple 8 to 10 people working on that, exactly, so. But I think overall, we've captured a lot of what the county residents and business owners have asked for, and we'd be glad to present that to you all in a draft plan. So.
It didn't look like any of the growth areas were
Yeah,
no, they're not. And in fact, I think we'd like to look at expanding some areas of Fork Union. And
yeah, Fork Union is a growth area that yes. I wanted to pull up and see. It looked mighty small.
Will the plan include guidelines to how growth areas expand or not?
That's where we start working on the small area plan or revitalization plan for Fork Union, and I know Mrs. Mack has been doing some work and some of her training and conferences and things, and so we're, and then one of our cohort members is also in Mesa County Planning Director, so I think we have some really good thoughts or ideas to start doing that in 24. Yes, yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Now we're going to look at the social services, the RFP design.
Yeah, so this, I'll go over really quick on this. And again, what I included in the package was probably more than I normally would have included in the package for this, but due to the fact that Mr. Fairchild wasn't here when we kind of went through the space study piece, I wanted him to have some prior background and context to that.
Due to unforeseen snowfall.
Well, like I said, it was a lot of the information was in the packet, so the same information. So again, just as a quick rehash, you know, in December 2019, a space study, or called a building and program feasibility study, also known as space study, that was presented to the board. So the study was a comprehensive overview and evaluation of Select County properties, identifying facility deficiencies, recommendations for improvements. You know, looked at a range of facility concepts, considering both long, short-term needs. Looked at, you know, resources to be able to implement the improvement plan. You know, what was required for maintenance of the facilities, upgrades, renovations, so on and so forth. So, I think it's a slide. I don't know. So from that, this was going back at that time, December 2019, it was determined that we were going to go with an option. And so that option at the time was called option 5. And so one, that was to build a new admin building. And so that would consolidate a lot of things in the new admin building. For instance, you know, current admin building departments, county attorney, commissioner of revenue, treasurer, registrar, you know, there'd be conference room space, and then that would have like a dedicated board of supervisors meeting space as well. Then that would do some minor renovations to the county admin building to make that an extension of the judicial courts complex. Again, the Commonwealth attorney would come out of the small building on Main Street. It would allow for courts expansion. It would allow for the sheriff's office expansion right now in his building. He's out of space. So that would provide some room for court staff and investigators. Court services would move in there, probation, and then also provide some conference room space and then storage. And then there was part of that was renovating the Carriersburg Gym. And so again, this is just kind of showing just preliminary what was discussed. Again, here's the sheriff's office, here's the library, here's kind of the circles there, again, putting a new county administration building in that area. And there was discussion of having space for a future school board building in that area as well. So it'd kind of be like a shared auditorium space. But again, the school board building that's kind of the later down the road one. And then again, as we said, you know, here are some buildings on Main Street that, you know, probably some of these smaller buildings the county would want to divest themselves of. You know, the Commonwealth Attorney's Building, the Public Works Building, and what was the Voter Registrar's Building at the time. I don't necessarily know if we want to do the same thing to the Commissioner's Building or the Treasurer's Building, since it really kind of falls on the historic places parcel for the historic courthouse. But again, you know, doing some renovations and making that current county admin more of an expansion of the judicial complex, and then Carriersburg Gym, as I said. Also part of that discussion was, one, building a new Department of Social Services building, which would include space for the health department in MACA. So you'd have, you know, residents and clients that were seeking similar services have everything in kind of one spot, and then renovate the Department of Social Services building to include space for expanded arts programs, parks and recreation, you know, cooperative extension, public works, since the maintenance shop and everything is there, and maybe even public utilities. And as I said, you know, the county may want to sell some buildings, maybe lease out some buildings. By doing a lot of this, it would also eliminate the need for the county to lease out space where the registrar is up at the Jefferson Center as well, too. So again, this is just kind of showing conceptually where the, you know, again, here's the county admin building. You know, you'd have the DSS Health Department MACA building. And again, there's benefits of that, too. I know, speaking with Ms. May before, it's always good to be near the sheriff's office, you know, if there's any issues or anything like that. And a lot of times, some of their, in other localities, that type of setup's in place. And then, you know, again, you know, doing some renovations to the current DSS building. So in the FY22 budget, the board approved $16.5 million as a budget amount, but again, the board would have to take out debt proceeds. The project was really kind of put on hold through COVID a little bit, just due to some costs and just of timing of things. You know, we're kind of at the point now where I think on a lot of different fronts, you know, in a lot of departments, we're absolutely tapped out on space. Two, you know, building costs in some of these older buildings, they're getting costly. And probably at the next board meeting, potentially, you know, we've got a request. You know, we were planning for Mr. Witten's office to be in the old registrar's building. Well, through getting some estimates for doing some minor renovations in there, it's turning out to be more than minor renovations. You know, you've got floor joists that have termite damage and rough, you know, there's issues. The Commonwealth Attorney's building has some issues in it. So again, it's kind of moving into a path of where we have less of these old buildings and have more of a consolidated building. You know, but there's also efficiencies. When you have all the departments kind of in one thing, you know, there's a one-stop shop for the residents to go to. There's room for expansion. And so that's kind of where we are. But really to move forward, we really need to move forward with the design to do that. The one thing, standard design cost estimates are generally 5% of a project's cost. So when we originally did this, it was originally about, for all of these things, back in 2019, it was about a $16.5 million cost to do this. You know, a couple years later, we had the architects and engineers that did this, same thing. You know, the cost went up to about $17 million. You know, since 2021, I think costs have certainly, they haven't dropped at that time, so it's going to be more. So where I'm kind of really getting with this is, we need to move forward with the design. There's a cost to do that design. And so if you design all of this, the next phase we really need to do is to do an RFP for the design to see what that costs. And different firms are going to give us different proposals. But the fact of the matter is, you're going to see probably a design in anywhere of $500,000 to $1 billion. That's what the cost is going to be to do all these, you know, final designs for these buildings. And so before we do that, we just wanted to get some direction from the board that the board wants staff to move forward with that. Because again, it's a little bit of a process. You know, certainly by saying we want you to move forward, it doesn't commit the county to signing a contract to do anything. But that's what we need to do to get the cost to really kind of determine how we move forward. Speaking with staff, speaking with Mr. Witten. You know, really the RFP probably provides us the best opportunity to get the most competitive bids on, or competitive proposals on a project like this. You know, certainly too, the one thing we could do is, one, I think we've got fund balance that we could pay for it out of fund balance. Now, you could do one of two things. If you pay for it out of fund balance, you could also enter into what's called a reimbursement resolution. So when you do actually take out debt proceeds down the line, the county could reimburse ourselves for taking out and spending the design costs. But maybe we've got enough in fund balance, which I believe we do, that maybe we just pay for it out of cash, and then that gives us the roadmap to say, okay, well, this is what it's going to cost. And at that point, well, do you move forward with every single building? Maybe is it a phased approach? Do you do the county admin building first? Then maybe you do the DSS building later, or however that looks like. But again, until we get the design, until we get the cost for those buildings, and again, you know, we've added staff since we've done this original space study, that'll really kind of tell us how we need to move forward. So
I thought that we had already taken out debt proceeds.
We did not take out debt proceeds.
But wasn't that the plan? Wasn't that what we were going to do?
So again, When the board approved this back in the budget in 2022, you can't, for instance, VRA is generally who we would go through for any type of county building infrastructure projects. Until a design's in place, they want to see what a design's going to be to actually get realistic costs before you take out, say it's $10 million, $16 million in proceeds, and you don't even know what the cost is going to be for a project.
Right. Correct me if I'm wrong, but this was the whole thing where we had the 25 million.
Yep.
For the first 2 years, we're going to take fund balance to pay for it, and then the debt going off would just be replacing debt.
Correct. I mean, so
that's
what
we had. But we only did the cars, the vehicles that we bought.
So what we did is we did offset any potential debt we were going to take out, but working with bond counsel and financial advisors, again, the debt wasn't taken out for this. Again, there would have been formal debt issuance documents coming before the board.
And I do recall that. It's just a shame because, of course, now we have entirely different interest rates.
Well, yeah, interest rates are definitely different from even from fiscal year 22. And the only thing I would say is, you know, costs were in 22, costs were a whole lot higher from a construction standpoint, too. I mean, you kind of got some pros and cons on both sides. Interest rates were probably ridiculous before, ridiculously low, but the cost to do projects, I mean, let's use the example of when we were looking at doing a small renovation in the admin building. I mean, the cost to do that project, what you thought was going to be maybe a $700,000 project was, I think, came in into like $1.2 million or something like that to build like a dedicated board area and meeting space. So there's some pros and cons. So, you know, hopefully, although costs haven't gone down to pre-COVID levels, hopefully by the time the design comes out and as we start going in that direction, costs will maybe start to subside a little bit. But, you know, as we move forward, and if the board wants to move forward, once we get an actual design for the buildings, that'll kind of educate us better on how to move forward, if it's phased, if it's everything all at once. And again, you know, looking at what the county had in unassigned fund balance above and beyond our reserves, I think currently in board package, it probably showed about, you know, high 15 or $16 million that we have above and beyond. And every year our fund balance is increasing. The county is going through an annual audit right now. I've gone through and been looking at some of the revenue projections. And, you know, our revenues are looking like we are above and beyond certainly what we had projected. Our expenditures were definitely below what we projected. So I think, again, we're going to see another year of our fund balance increasing, too. You know, the one thing with that is, you know, we've had capital projects that we maybe couldn't move quickly as forward with just because of supply chain issues as well. So I think you're going to see our fund balance in another increase. So
15,758.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So the design was, you know, and maybe there's enough fund balance. Maybe the board says, well, you know, we want to do one building first. If you go back to this slide, for instance. So to do the, let's just say, you said you wanted to do the admin building first and then convert the admin building to the courts. Well, that's 5.7 back then in about $2 million. Well, if you move forward with the design, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's something less than that. Maybe there's an opportunity to pay cash, or maybe there's an opportunity to not pay cash and take out debt, and maybe some of that changes, but we're at the point where we really need to look and get a design done. And so just looking for some direction from the board to move forward with
that. I don't think the needs changed, right? I
mean, the needs are getting, again, costs went up and everything, and you know, we've expanded since then. Since the space study was done, we haven't shrunk. Like I can tell you, you know, the sheriff's office, they're at capacity. Mm-hmm. They're doubled up in spaces. In the admin building, we're literally out of space. We've got doubled up spaces. I know Ms. Mabe in this building has said they're out of space. And so yeah, I mean we're not creating new space. That's for certain.
That's the one thing good we did when we built the hospital. Not the one thing, but one good thing that we did when we built the high school. I believe it was built for 1,800 students.
I think more than that.
I believe the high school was built for 1,800 students, and right now, with five grades, we're under 15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We got room for 350 more.
Right.
The cost of
upper level. Mm-hmm.
The cost of retrofitting versus the cost of new build is almost double. Mm-hmm. By the way, mm-hmm. when you're doing high school.
Yeah.
I think we have to move forward. I think we need the study to know what the next step is.
To do the RFP.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we will go ahead and move forward with that then.
Great. Okay.
And one thing too, that's on the board's goals too, to move forward with that. So.
Okay. Now we are at the consent agenda. Minutes of October 8, 2023, resolution recognizing Jack Davis. April Scout, J. VDOT Secondary Road Acceptance, Allen Hill Subdivision, and K. VDOT Secondary Road Acceptance, Village Oak Subdivision, Phase 4. L. She Ford Vehicle Purchase Agreement. M. Temporary Staff Stipend for Additional Duties. And fiscal year 24 FCPA Public School Grant Supplementary Appropriation. And O, CRMF Fiscal Year 24 Courthouse Mold Remediation. And last P, Region 10 Operational Agreement for Opiate Abatement Authority Awards. And that's the end of the consent. Does anyone want to pull anything for more discussion?
I'll make a motion that we adopt the consent agenda.
Second.
All right, Mr. Sheridan. Motion to adopt the consent agenda. Mr. Bryant, second. All in favor?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. So. And I think Mr. Child has.
Can y'all hear me now?
Oh, yeah, now we do. We thought we had lost you.
It's kind of nice.
Well, I had a bunch of questions for Aqua, and I apologize to the citizens who are listening that I didn't get them in, and I've been doing everything I can to get in. I'll just tell you quickly what I figured out, and I know this is going to sound crazy. Every time I turn on the signal in this rental car, I'd lose the volume where I couldn't hear you all, and I couldn't speak to you.
That was God sending you a message.
Yes.
Turn
to the left.
But when's that meeting that he talked about?
There's a meeting at the lake on the 7th, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really wants to hear from
you. And he said he wants to hear questions, so that's the opportunity for you to catch up with him.
Yeah, Mr. Fairchild, I can get you the date and information for that if you want to attend.
Did you hear any of his presentation? Because it'll be audio, you'll be able to hear it.
Yeah, I pulled over and I could hear it, but I couldn't. At that point, I had dialed in, and for whatever reason on dial-in, I couldn't. I kept trying to yell, please hold him, when he was closing his part and y'all couldn't hear me. So, yes, at that point I had pulled over and listened to his presentation.
Well, you're
and he's gone already, is he?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, okay.
You'll have an opportunity.
Well, I don't cuss often, but I can tell you I'm going to have to say some extra prayers when I lay down tonight.
The New York Department of Highway thanks you for melting that snow that was around you.
Oh, wow.
The 7th will be, he said he wants to
hear
from people.
Yeah, he wants to hear.
And it's a work group type deal, so that would be a great time to hit those questions with the residents around you.
Yes.
Okay, thank you all.
Okay. All right.
Now, new road, I think.
Yeah, just one quick thing, new business. So I got a request from a resident. So there's a road called Stonewood Lane, which is off 250. It's a 0.2-mile road, and this resident requested adding the road into the secondary for secondary plan for street acceptance. So I had VDOT do just a little preliminary look of the road. So one is a gravel road. There would be lots of improvements that would be needed. And again, it's a gravel road going to the end of the cul-de-sac with three residents.
Where is it again?
What's that? It's called Stonewood Lane. It's up off of 250.
It's up in Union Mills.
Oh no, that's, I'm sorry. You're right. It's off Union Mills Road. It's across from South Keswick, near that area.
Okay.
Thanks for that. Yeah. No, there's like a big farm that goes behind it, and I don't know what the farm's called, but it's, thank you, Mr. Witt.
It's up for me?
Yeah. So anyway, after speaking with VDOT, for them to get the road into VDOT standards for that little small stretch, you're talking anywhere in the neighborhood of 350 to 400,000. And as I told them, I said, you know, generally on road acceptance, I said, you know, that's come to the board. The board doesn't necessarily get a lot of money every year from VDOT to do things in the county. I mean, the county would have to bank your funds for many years to do that. And, you know, I said, I'll certainly bring the request forward to the board, but, you know, it's not a through road. It's at the end going to a cul-de-sac of three residences. And so I said,
to drive.
I said, that's a big ask for three residences.
Yeah, we could tell a couple of places.
Yeah.
Not only that, but why wouldn't everybody want them to do
that? Yeah, that's what I was saying.
They would. I told them it was a tough request with the cost, and again, I just had a picture. You know, VDOT went out and just did like a quick, you know, look of the road. But I mean, again, you're talking encroachments, you're talking utilities, you're talking, you know, radius and the width of the road. There's a lot there to it, and so I just wanted to get the board's direction if I move forward with that, or just let them know that we are not going to proceed with that.
Okay.
I don't think we can be.
Okay.
All right. This is probably late, maybe out of place. Joaquin's having a light the tree. You know, we used to light the tree up here on Palmer. Mm-hmm. Joaquin's house had some notices. It's going to be in December.
Okay.
The 15th, you could announce that you put in the band. All right. And now I will have the second public comments. If you'd like to speak to the board, you should come forward and give your name and address. And you have 5 minutes. Anyone? If not, I will close the second public comments. And Mr. O'Brien.
Madam Chair, I move the Atlanta County Board of Supervisors to enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A5. Section 2.2-3711A6, Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing prospective industry, the prospective business update, investment of funds, contract user grant under the watershed sewer ordinance. And then under legal matters, skill games, solar siting agreement, contract user grant under the water and sewer ordinance.
Okay, do we have a second? Second. All right. We have the motion to go into closed session by Mr. O'Brien. Second by Mrs. Higger. All in favor?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye.
Yes. Mr.
I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge one only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the meeting by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second.
All right, it's been motioned by Mr. Bryan, second by Mr. Sheridan.
Aye.
Mr. Bryan.
Aye.
Mr. Sheridan.
Aye.
And chair both sides, and then one missing. And now we have a resolution. You're going to summarize the.
I'm just going to make a motion to approve the resolution authorizing the development agreement between Fluvanna County and the Economic Development Authority of Fluvanna County and Zion 3 Notch LLC.
All right.
And
may I have a
second?
Right, motion is made by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mr. O'Brien. Mr. Carl Favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye.
Are you opposed?
1-0.
You're opposed?
Okay. You're opposed?
Yeah. I thought we were going to talk about it.
What's in this result?
This is
for Wawa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Missy.
Yeah, I thought you said that. I mean,
motion to adjourn.
All right. Do we have a second?
Second.
All Okay, we have a motion to adjourn in a second. Let me say that all in favor.
Aye.
All opposed, check. We are adjourned.